Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Daled Amud Aleph, six lines down. The Gemara here is discussing the necessity for the Torah to tell us, Uvenigach, Uvatigach, to tell us that even when there's a death to a minor, that there still is a chiyuv here for the shor, the Baal HaShor, in those instances. The Gemara says, why is that necessary? We could have learned it out of a Mematzina, we could have learned it out of a Kal V'chomer. In the end, the Gemara says that it's not so easy to learn it out because there's a difference between that dam and shor. The source or the premise by which we thought we could learn it was from when two humans are involved. When a human being kills a minor, then in that case he's held responsible. We thought the same would be true to a shor through a kal v'chomer, through a mematzinu. In the end, the Gemara rejects that because there's a chumra by a dam of the arba'ad dvarim, meaning chamisha dvarim in total that you pay for. Versus the shor who only pays for nezek. So because of that, the Gemara said we had a necessity for the psukim of ovenigach, ovatigach, the chayev alaktanim kigdolim, to tell you that just like if the shor kills a gadol, the shor is put to death and the balim are responsible, the same is true with regards to ktanim, to minors. Now the Gemara says, ve'en li ela b'muadim. That only told us the din by mu'ad because ovenigach, Ovatigach is written by the halachot of Shor Muad in the Parshia. So therefore, that limud of Benigach Ovatigach only solves the problem with regards to Muad. Bitam minayin. How do we know that the same din applies to a tam? Meaning that just like someone of age, if the shor kills them, you'll be responsible. So too by minors, they'll be responsible. Hello, dinu. Isn't it a kal v'chomer, but here it's really not a kal v'chomer. Here it's more along the lines of a Mematzinu. Hoel v'chiyev b'ish v'isha, v'chiyev b'ben u'bebat. That in a situation or circumstance, we know that the Torah says that if the shor kills an ish or isha, those of age, it's chayav. And we also know that when it comes to a ben and bat, chayav. Ma k'shechiyev b'ish v'isha. Just like by the case of ish isha, lo chelakta bo ben tam limuad, there is no differentiation between tam and muad. That is because the words ish o isha appear twice in the parshia. Once v'chi gach short ish o et isha. That's talking about a short tam. And later on it says v'hu ad bevala v'lo ishmenu v'emit ish o isha. That already in yesterday's daf we dealt why do you need ish v'isha twice. But nevertheless, it does mention ish v'isha by muad and it does mention ish v'isha by tam. So there we're clear that both by muad that kills a man or a woman or a tam that kills a man or a woman, they're both subject to the death penalty to Skila. So, just like over there, there's no differentiation between tam and muad, the gabe ish visha, af kishchiev beben ubat, lo tachlok bo ben tam and muad. So too, when it comes to the situation of ben ubat, minors, you're not going to differentiate between a muad and a tam. So even though it's written by muad, it should have equal application to the muad and tam, because we don't see any differentiation. Like by ish visha, we saw no differentiation, so too by ben ubat, there should be no differentiation. Ve'od kal v'chomer. In addition, there is a kal v'chomer. Uma ish v'isha shekein horov kocham b'nezakim. When it comes to ish v'isha, where they have a weakened hand, when it comes to paying nezak, that is because they're responsible. If they do damage, they're responsible for that damage, and they have to make reparations, restitution, for the damage that is done. Lo chilakta bo ben tam l'muad. Over there, there's no distinction between tam and muad. Ben ubat shiafek kocham b'nezakim. Ben Ubat, who have the upper hand by Nizakim, that Rashi quotes from a Mishnah later on in the Masechta, which is the Chereshotevetan Piyatan Ra, that their circumstances create a difficult situation. If you come into contact with them, it's going to be to your detriment, because a Chovel Ben Chayav, if you damage them, you're going to be responsible and have to pay. But if they do damage to others, then they are not Chayav for their activities, because obviously not Bnei Deah. So over there, when you have ben ubat, they have a stronger position by nizakim. Then certainly over there, you shouldn't differentiate between tam and muad. So the Gemara gives two reasons as to why the same din by muad should apply by tam. One is a kal v'chomer, which says if it's true by ish v'isha, who have a weakened hand, then it certainly should be true by a ben ubat, who have a stronger hand. And we also have a mematzino, which is we see that ish v'isha are repeated both by tam and muad, and there's no distinction made. So too, ben ubat should have that same structure, which there should be no differentiation between tam and muad. All right, so now the Gemara says, amart, V'chi danin kal mechamur? Do you really dan a kal, a lighter form from that which is more stringent? Lachmir? To go to chumra? Or that the Gemara has, or the alternate girsa here is lachmir lav. Imi chmir b'muat, hachamur, tachmir b'tam makal? How could it be just because you are machmir by muad, why should it be that you are machmir by a tam that is kal? Also, ima mart b'ish v'isha. And again, there you said b'ish v'isha, shekein chayavin b'mitzvot. They are parties that have an obligation to do mitzvot. Tomar b'ben obat shpturim in a mitzvot. I say by ben obat to our pturim in a mitzvot. The way Rashi learns this in the first lashon, and the one that he favors heavily, is that these two answers are responding to the two limudim that we had before. Again, we had one limud that said that there should be no differentiation between tam and muad because there was no such distinction drawn between ish v'isha. So too by a ben ubat, there should be no such distinction. And secondly, we learn a kavachomer, which is that ish v'isha, who have a weakened hand by nizakin, then the ben ubat have a stronger hand by nizakin, certainly there should be no distinction by tam and muad. So to answer those two questions, or to show both, to answer those two limudim, or to show those two limudim are incorrect, the Gemara here brings 2 points. The first point is the one that you raised before, which is, how could you be learning a din from a muad to a tam? You're telling me that the din is true by a muad, but that's because the muad is chamur. And then you're going to tell me, oh, just because the din is so by a muad, it should also be the same way by a tam. That doesn't make any sense. You're taking the item that is more chamur and saying, okay, this is the paradigm or the structure, and therefore, through a meimatzina, we're going to bring it over to tam. Why would you ever do that? And that's what the Gemara says. Chidanim kal michamur. When was the last time you take the kal being here the tam, and learn it out of the chamur, the muad? Lahachmir, to be machmir on the tam. It's one thing if there's something's more chamur, then you can say I'm going to be machmir. But over here where the tam is the kula, now you're going to say I'm going to be machmir, just like the muad? There's no logical extension from there, and belies the question that you asked before, which is, if that's really what you wanted to do, you'd write it by tam, and then you could extrapolate to muad. The fact that it's written by muad makes it seem the other way around, that it's exclusively true by muad, not true by a tam. So that's the answer to the first statement of the Gemara. Then, in the second statement of the Gemara, im amart v'ish v'isha, the kavachomer that you mentioned, that there's a kavachomer from ish v'isha, who have a weakened hand by nizakim, to ben ubat of a stronger hand by nizakim, that's just not true. We have a kavachomer that looks at it just the other way. We have kulot and chumrot by ish v'isha, meaning that there's no standard that one is more chamur than the other, because by the gabei mitzvot, ish v'isha are chayavin. When it comes to mitzvot, the ben ubat are pturim. So over there you see ish v'isha has a chutzat chumra to it. So how can you claim that the ben ubat are the chumra because they have the stronger hand by nizakim? They're the kula, because they're not chayavin in mitzvot. It's not a standard where you can say it's always more chamur, the ben ubat, and therefore you could have a limud. So that puts us into a predicament now, where we don't know how, by tam, that we know that minors, if the tam kills them, that the tam would be chayav skila. So again, by muad, we already took care of the problem. We have ish v'isha, we have ben ubat, and we have clear limudim as to when the shor does damage or kills in that instance, he'll be chayav across the board. What we don't have is by tam. By tam, we only have ish v'isha, we don't have ben ubat, and we want to know, how do we get ben ubat over to tam? So the answer is, Talmud Omar, ovenigach, ovatigach. So we bring the same pasuk we brought before, which is benigach ubatigach. Why should that solve the problem? Because that's a pasuk that's found by muad. How does it solve the problem here? Nigicha betam, nigicha bemuad. Nigicha damita, nigicha denizakin. That is because the word igach appears twice in the pasuk, unnecessarily. It could have said, oven ovatigach. Why does it say, ovenigach, ovatigach? It uses the term negicha or gach twice. That comes to teach us that there's a negicha by tam, and there's a negicha by muad. Meaning that negichot over here are equally applicable to the ben ubat, whether it is a tam or whether it's a muad. That's why the word igach is used twice. And the same is true by negicha lemitav and negicha lenizakim. Similarly, by whether the negicha causes the death, the bala shor is responsible. Meaning the shor will be killed, and he'll be responsible if it's a muad for kofar. If it's a tam, he will be patur in that case. And then negicha lenizakim, if the shor does damage to an ish v'isha, or the shor does damage to a ben or a bat, then the bala shor will be responsible in those cases. But that's learned out of the fact that the word igach is used here. And so Rashi says, igach, igach, trezimne. Comes to teach you that all of these are incorporated in that Lashon of Yigach, and it's not solely for Muad. All right, so now the next Mishnah begins. Shor Shaya Mitchachech Bakotel. The shor was rubbing up against a wall. Benafal al Adam. And the wall then collapses onto someone. Nitkaven Arug et Abeima Veraget Adam. Or a case where a shor intends to kill a Behema and ends up killing a human being. Liknaani intended to kill a Knaani Verag Ben Yisrael, instead he kills a Jew. Lidifelim, he was going after or attacking Nifelim, these are fetuses or unviable entities. Varag ben Kayama, and he ends up killing a viable entity, Patur. In all of those cases, the shor is Patur. That includes the first case where he knocks the wall down onto the individual, as well as all these other cases where the shor clearly didn't have intent for the victim that is killed in the end. He has intent for other parties. So in the case of the intent for a behemah versus an adam, over there it's clear that if he injures a behemah or kills a behemah, that's a din in nizakin. If he kills a person, that's already makes him subject to skila. So here we intended for behemah and ends up killing an adam, that's eno b'kavanah, or that lacks kavanah. Because of that, you are patur. And we already saw that in Rabbi Eliezer's shita 2 days ago, when he was trying to explain chatzi kofir of tam. He said that, what's the scenario in which the tam is still alive? That's a case where he intended for a behema and ended up killing an adam. Bow a knani, intending for a knani, and then harak ben Yisrael. You look in the little parentheses there, the star at the bottom of the daf, it says, dinu ave patre bidinayu. Because in the din of the knanim, etche kavein larok etzeh varak etzeh. The knanim believe that if you intend to kill one individual and you end up killing another individual, you are not chayav. So why here, if they killed a Knani, we would judge them according to their own terms, and therefore we would not have the Balashor be responsible in that case or have to pay for kofar or have the enemy put to death, because bitoch dinam of the Knanim, then they wouldn't put the person to death. But in the end, the Arak ben Yisrael, that turns out to be problematic, because had he directed at Kavanah for ben Yisrael, it would have been problematic. In all these instances, it's patur. Now, what patur means is the machloketir between the Amoraim. So now, what's interesting about this, and the Baal Tosfot make a note of this, that what happens if the animal does this behavior 3 times? It goes ahead and intends for an animal, ends up killing an Adam. But the Baal Tosfot say is, you cannot establish a Muad, you cannot establish a consistency of behavior to make the animal to Muad, when it's Eino Mitkavein, when there is no Kavanah. And that is almost inherent in the definition of the activity. If an activity is unintentional, it's Dover Sheinu Mitkavein, it's very hard to establish or make something into a Muad, for even if it happens on a recurring basis, it's much more likely to be deemed to be random than intent in those cases, because all of this involves a lack of intent. And that's how the Baal HaTosfot note that the Gemara knew that our Mishnah must be talking about a case of Tam, and then it has to come up with this wild scenario where it makes it into Muad in the Mishnah, because otherwise if it's simply talking about a case of unintended consequences of the behavior of the animal, then in that case, everybody would agree that you can't create a Muad, and the Mishnah is definitely talking about a case of Tam. Amar Shmuel, Patur Mimita V'Chayav V'Kofer. The Patur in our Mishnah means Patur from the death penalty, meaning if the shor is not put to death, but you are Chayav in Kofer, you are responsible to pay Kofer. This is obviously against the position of Rabbi Eliezer that we saw before, as well as the position of Rabbah, who says that kofar is connected to the death penalty. If you have a death penalty, there is kofar. Without the death penalty, there's no kofar. It's against that position of Rabbah, but it is like the position that we saw yesterday in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, which is im kofar. They're both kofar, shelo bikavana, to tell you that even when there's a lack of intent, Balim still pay for kofar, even though the animal is not put to death. And Shmuel is clearly holding like that shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Amar, patur mizeh u'mizeh. Rav says not only you're patur miskila, but you're also patur from the payment or the necessity to pay kofar over here, like Rabba's shita. If there's no skila, then there is no kofar. And since there's no skila here because you lack intent, it's she'enu b'kavana, there will not be any kofar in this instance. So the Gemara says, Ba'amai, why are you paying kofar over here? Ha, tamhu. It is a tam. And everybody agrees that when it comes to a tam, that there is no payment of kofar. There might be a death penalty, but there is no kofar. And over here, you have a tam shelo bekavana. You have a tam that lacks kavana. And there, across the board, there is nobody who says that a tam shelo bekavana is chayav in kofar. So if our mission is talking about a tam, then why are we talking about here the payment of kofar? Kedama Rav, it's like what Rav says further on the Gemara on Daf Mem Chet Amud Bet. This is a situation or circumstance in which the animal has racked up a consistent behavior of following into cisterns when there are people down below and killing the people down below or the person down below in the bore in the cistern. He has this knack for landing in borot that have a person to cushion their fall. And so there he's becoming mu'ad for this type of behavior, which might otherwise have been strange, but now it's no longer strange because he consistently does it. Hachanami, so too in our scenario over here, is b'mu'ad l'itzchachech al b'nei adam b'ktalim. The case where he has a regular habit of rubbing up against walls and knocking them down on top of people. It says, ihochi bar kedalu. If that's the case, then he is subject to the death penalty because even as a tam, if he intentionally knocks the wall onto someone, then he's going to be put to death. So now, Bishlamo Hotam, over there in the case of Mem Chetam Ubet, by the cistern where he lands in the boar and he kills whoever's in there, the Chazi Yiroka of an offal. He saw a vegetable on the side of the boar, or in the boar, and he went to get it, and he falls in. Elohacha Ma'ika the Meimar. But over here in our case, what exactly is precipitating this behavior of the animal that we can say that he doesn't have intent to kill, but rather he was engaged in something that's normal behavior, and as a side effect, it ended up killing the people. So, Hachanami bin Chachech Bakotel Hanato. It's a case where he's rubbing it up against the wall to scratch his back or to get some Hana'ah, and that's why the wall is falling. And Mar says, Hachanami bin Chachech Bakotel Hanato. He's rubbing himself against the wall for Zana'ah. Mar says, Minayadina. How do you know that's what the shore is doing? It's not like he tells us afterwards, haha, you see, man, I took the wall down, I was scratching my back, and the wall went down. How do you know that that's what he was doing? Could have just been running into the wall to knock it down. So the Bata Nafal Kamit Chachekbe, because we see the continuation of such behavior even after the wall was taken down, he continues to rub his back on the wall. So it's clear that's what his intent was, or that was the solution that he was trying to get at. All right, so now, over here, we have to deal with a number of factors which are somewhat difficult in this situation. The first of which is the problem in Rav Shita. Rav over here says that you patur mizeh mizeh. Over here in our Mishnah, the circumstance you are patur from mitah, meaning the shore is not put to death, and the balim don't pay kofar. In a circumstance where we set up the case here as being a case where he runs into the wall three times, knocks it down onto people. Yet, on the Gemara on Mem Chet Amud Bet, over there, what the Gemara quotes over there from Rav, is that the shore has this habit of falling into cisterns or borot and crushing people down below. Over there, Rav says he's patur memita because he lacks kavanatol azik. But on the other hand, the kofar you are chayav for. And so that is what all the Rishonim have to deal with is, why is Rav over here saying that you're patur from the kofar? Whereas Rav and Memchet Amud Bet says you are chayav for the kofar, which in cases that seem to be almost akin or similar, which is the case of this behavior where he keeps falling into borot and killing the people in them, and this behavior where he keeps bumping into walls and they fall on people. So Rashi already here, and more explicitly on Daf Mem Chet Amud Bet, explains what the difference is. He acknowledges there's a problem, and therefore tries to address the issue by explaining that the cases are different. Now, underlying Rashi's Shita, which the Balei Tosfos will argue on, is that in order to become a Mu'ad, you need three times. That you need a recurring behavior three times in order to become a muad, and that doesn't matter whether we're talking about Karen, Shane, Regel, doesn't matter which of the Av, Ot, Nizikim we're speaking about. In order to become a muad that pays kofar, you have to have a repetitive or consistent behavior. You've done it three times already. So for that reason, over here, Rashi believes that in both instances, there's a history to this animal. In the case on Mem Chet Amud Bet, the animal has a history of going to eat the grass on the side of the boar and then falling to the boar when somebody's down below and killing them. So in that case, he has this consistent or recurring behavior where he goes, and therefore Rav believes over there that he's chayav kofar. The reason being is that the animal in all senses is really, that this eating of the stuff on the side of the boar and falling in is a total dav shein, demitzkaven lanato, because he intends to get hana there. V'im tomar mishunahu, v'ein zo shein, if you say that's an unusual behavior, it's not called shein, kevin di'adlei orchahu. Since he's done this on a repetitive basis, on a regular basis, it changes into shein from being mishunah, because he's demonstrated that this is the type of consistent or recurring behavior that the animal has. In terms of his kavanah over there, is no intent to fall into the boar. So there, for that reason, the shore is not subject to skila in any of these cases, because he has no intent to kill the person down below. He just happens to have this recurring behavior that lands among people down below. So for that reason, it'll be patur miskila. But nevertheless, on the fourth time when he does this, he'll be chayav kofer, according to Rav, because he lacks kavanah. On the other hand, in our case, Rashi says, what about the fact that Rav says over here, patur mizeh mizeh? Says, hanimilei b'muad negichot b'kavanah. It's a case where the animal was already a mu'ad for negichot by intentionally killing people. And if he intentionally killed people, he's a tam, he shouldn't be around anymore, he should have been subject to the death penalty. But, varak la'agma, he went ahead and ran away each time. V'nagach dalet shelo b'kavanah. And when he came to the fourth time, he does it unintentionally. Therefore, the Gzeret HaKetuv says that you're patur, because there's a connection between Asher Yisakel, the Gambalav Yumat, and the payment of Kofer. Kozman she'en Asher b'skila, because the Asher does not get the death penalty in Bo'er, ein Balim Mishalmim Kofer. Therefore, the Balim do not pay Kofer. Avazesh lo hayta bo chiyuv skila klal. Here, in our case, by when he fell into the boar, there was no skila, or any reason to have skila over here. Therefore, when he has this repetitive behavior, he becomes a mu'ad only for the kofer, but not mu'ad for the killing. And it's a mu'ad of shein and regel. So what Rashi says to differentiate between the cases is that in our case over here, he has a history. He has a history of killing people. He has a history of knocking walls over on top of people, even when he doesn't need to scratch himself. First three times he came, knocked the wall right onto a person. He's done it three times already. He's established a pattern of behavior. The fourth time he shows up, he does it unintentionally. This time, for a change, instead of just smashing the wall down onto someone, he starts to rub his back on the wall, and we see that he's doing it for Hanato. Rashi's underlying premise is that the three times he did it before without the Hana'a already establishes him as a Mu'ad for this type of behavior. And even though over here the behavior is different, because it's a behavior that is unintentional this time, because he's just really doing it for Hanato, we'll still consider it to him to be a Mu'ad. And since we consider him to be a Mu'ad, Rav says over here, he's patur mizeh umizeh, because then we will invoke the principle, if the animal is not subject to a death penalty, then no kofar will be paid. On the other hand, in the case of Memchet Amud Bet, with the boar and the grass on the other side, and he falls in onto the people down below, over there, he never established a pattern of behavior that said he's a killer shore, or he intends to hurt. In every case, the only intent he had was to eat the grass on the other side. He wanted to get hana'ah. And so therefore, when he falls the last time, and it's because of hana'ah once again, over there, we're going to say that he is chayav for the kofer, because he's established a pattern of behavior of killing people, however unintentional it is, but he's established that pattern of behavior, so therefore he's a mu'ad for kofer. But he's still not a mu'ad for skilar, for the death penalty, and that's why we don't have the regular limud of comparing the death penalty to kofar, because the death penalty is not relevant at all over here. The Balei HaTosafot don't like Rashi's interpretation for a number of reasons, one of which is he doesn't like the fact that Rashi says you can establish a pattern or behavior by which if you do it intentionally for the first three times, and then on the fourth time you do it unintentionally, we'll still assign that shein mu'ad to you from the times that you did intentionally. And the Balei HaTosafot say, I don't understand that at all, because the two have nothing to do with each other. They're different patterns of behavior, or different type of behavior by the animal, and therefore they need different or recurring times, each of them, to establish a pattern of behavior. So that's one thing that bothers the Tosafot over here about Rashi's pshat. So then Tosafot offers an alternative, the first piece of which is, he disagrees with Rashi, and the Ravid also says a similar thing, that you need three times in order to be a mu'ad for kofar. And without three times of repetitive behavior, you're just not going to be chayav for kofar. Here the Balei HaTosafot say that's not true across the board. That is only true with regards to Karen, but with regards to Shane and Regel, mu'ad here means mu'ad mitchilato. It means on the first time you are a mu'ad, because that's the nature of Shein and Regel. And then the Rabbeinu Tam introduces a difference, a distinction over here in order to explain the outcome of the halacha in our case versus the case by the boor. He says that the case by the boor is the case of Regel. It's a case or an instance where the animal is acting in a manner or a behavior where it's normal, completely normal type of behavior, and he has intent to do whatever it is through the normal behavior in which he is engaged. So you can see that in the Tosafot, l'kaman havi regel b'kavana, sh'meniach atzmo b'bor k'dei l'chol hayerek. The animal wants to go into the cistern to eat the grass or whatever is there in the bor. V'yodeya sh'mitmaech adam k'mo b'regel, sh'dasa gabi tinok. He knows that he's walking on someone, he knows he's landing on someone, but his whole objective is to get to the vegetables, the vegetation that's there. That's completely normal behavior for the animal. It's regel. But not only is it complete normal behavior, it's normal behavior for him to know that he's killing someone or he's stepping on someone. But he doesn't have any, again, nefarious thoughts in doing that. He's simply just acting like an animal does, which is he goes where his food is and he doesn't care what he steps on along the way. Doesn't care if he kills someone along the way. And so therefore, in that case, we say that he has kavanato is the regel. Since it's kavanato the regel, we compare it to kavanato by Karen. And just like by kavanato by Karen, you are subject or chayav in kofir. So it's over there by the case of regel, you're going to be chayav for the kofir. Whereas in our case over here, the underlying reason why the wall's being knocked down is not because he's acting in a normal way, which is that he's stomping on things to get to where he wants, but rather he's rubbing himself against the kotel for the shein, because he wants to get hana'ah, he wants to get pleasure from that. The knocking down of the wall is completely unintentional. Or as Tosafot coins it here, it's shein shelo bikavana. And so we're going to then look, shein kikavana is patur mikofer, just like Karen shelo bikavana is patur mikofer. And so that's how the Rabbeinu Tam differentiates between the cases, and saying that the case of Memchet is a case of regel, a regel bekavana, and regel bekavana we compare to Karen Mu'ad bekavana. Even though Karen Mu'ad requires three times to become a Mu'ad, nevertheless, regel is Mu'ad mitchilato, and therefore he is a Mu'ad from day one, and he doesn't have to have this behavior be repetitive in order to be chayav. In our case over here, he is rubbing himself against the wall. Once again, on the first shot, he'll be a mu'ad because it's shein. But over here, it's shein with an unintended consequence, which is that he's rubbing himself against the wall, and he results in an unintended consequence of the wall falling down and then killing someone. So in that case, we'll compare it to the case of Karen shelo bikavana, and that's why Rav believes over here that not only you're patur mimita, you're also patur mikofer. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Tam reconciles or explains the two sugyot. The last explanation that's brought by the Balei HaTosafot, but is favored by other Rishonim as well, which is Rabbeinu Shmuel, the Rashbam, Matzah Sefer Yashan, Delo Garsina Milti Derav, the Patur Mizeh Mizeh. That the whole statement of Rav is completely left out of the Gemara here. It didn't exist here. Ule Kaman Darsina Tanya Kavati De Shmuel Utiyuf De Derabo. And later on in our Sugya, where it brings a bright that it's support of Shmuel's position, instead of saying that it's a strong refutation of Rav's position, it says it's a strong refutation of Rabbo's position. And so therefore the Rashbam took Rav out of the sugya completely, and obviously that solves the problem. Now you don't have a steer in Rav between here and Adaf Memchet, because Rav is not a position in our Gemara anymore. And so that's the third way to deal with this steer in Rav, is to say that the whole Gemara here does not involve Rav. And the fact that it says, Rav patar mizeh mizeh, was eliminated from the Girsa, or the Rashbam found Sfarim that did not have that in the Girsa. Gemara says, okay, you came up with this solution, the case where it's rubbing up against the wall, and it knocks the wall down on top of a person. According to Rashi, this means it's the fourth time he's knocked the wall on top of a person. The first three times he just knocked the wall to get it on top of the person. This fourth time, he did a little bit differently. He went ahead and rubbed his back on the wall. He was enjoying a nice itch on the wall, and then, unintended consequence of that is the wall falls onto a person. For the Balei HaTosafot, this is the first time he's engaged in this behavior. But because it's shein, it's mu'ad right away, and you would be chayav in kofir if it was mu'ad b'kavanah. But over here, you lack kavanah, or intent, because the reason that he's up against the wall is to itch himself, not to knock the wall down. The fact that the behemah knocks the wall down, and then the wall kills someone, That's not direct damage by the animal itself of the individual. That's what's called sorot. He's moving another object. He's putting another object into motion because of his koach, and that becomes akin to sorot. And even if you want to suggest that there is kofar by keren, which we know that's written in the Torah, kofar by shein and ragel, which are the avot nezikin, there's nobody who thinks that there's a din of kofar by sorot. So if that's the case, then if this is a case of sorot, why are we speaking about kofar in this case or situation? So Amar Rav Mari, Brei de Rav Kana, the kaza minei minei. The case here is that he is moving along the wall, and through his bumping into it and his rolling into it all the time, until he ends up knocking it over onto the individual. So it's not a case where he, through his scratch in his back, there's this unintended consequence of the wall falling down, but rather he is engaged with pushing on the wall and pressing on the wall, not with intent to kill anyone, but certainly with intent to bump the wall and to hit the wall. And therefore, when the wall actually collapses, that will not be considered to be tzorot, but rather a direct result of his behavior. Yeah, it's not a case where he bumped the wall and then the wall collapses. It's a case where he's pushing on the wall and then he and the wall fall over or go over and fall on the individual. So, I mean, it's no longer where he's released some sort of koach or some sort of force that then plays on the wall and then the wall lands on the person, but rather his interaction with the wall is what causes the wall to fall directly. It's as if he's leaning on the wall and it falls over. So it's no longer his kocho, but rather gufo. So literally his gufo becomes like an extension of his guf when he kills the individual in that case. The Gemara doesn't say he fell over as well, but the Gemara says clearly that his bumping the wall, that is not that he released a force that shot the wall away, but rather his continuous interaction with the wall causes the wall to collapse with him going, not through his force. And therefore, it's basically an extension of his body rather than being his koach. The Gemara says, Tanya Kavate de Shmuel. We have a bright that's more Shmuel's position. This is what the Rashbam was saying. And the Gemara here says, Tiyufte de Rav. That is a strong refutation of Rav's position, which indicates that Rav had an alternate position to Shmuel. So that's where the Rashbam says the Girsa over here was Tiyufte de Rabba. Tiyufte de Rabba is because Shmuel argues on Rabba. I mentioned that when we first started the Sugya, that Rabba believes that the only time you pay kofar is when the shore is chayav skila. The shore is not chayav skila, you don't pay kofar. Shmuel clearly does not hold like that. It holds like Rabbi Yochanan that you pay kofar, ben bekavana, ben shelo bekavana. Ben bekavana where you're chayav skila, ben shelo kavana where the animal is not chayav skila, there's still a din of kofar. And therefore, if you have a braita that supports Shmuel, it's automatically a question on the position of Rabba, who says that there's a direct correlation between the skilat ashor and the kofar. The braita says, yesh chayav b'mita u'b'kofer. V'yesh chayav b'kofer u'patur b'mita. There's sometimes that you are chayav b'mita and kofer, meaning that the shore will be killed and the balim will pay kofer. There are instances where the balim will pay kofer, yet the shore will not end up with skila. Obviously, that's a proof to Shmuel and against Rabba's position or Rab's position over here, because you have a case where there's no skila and yet there's still a payment of kofer. There are instances where the shore will have a death penalty, but the balim will not be subject to kofar. And there are instances when you're not chayav in either of these issues. What are the circumstances? Mu'ad b'kavana. If the animal is already deemed to be a mu'ad, it's done this a repetitive behavior three times, and then it intentionally goes ahead and does whatever it does, chayav mita u'b'kofar. In that case, the animal is subject to the death penalty, and the balim will have to pay kofar. Mu'ad shelo bikavana. If the animal is already deemed to be a mu'ad, but he does it unintentionally, chayav bikofar upatur mimita, then you're obligated to pay kofar, and you're patur mimita, which is basically the scenarios in our Mishnah. The scenarios in our Mishnah are a case of davar she'enu mitkavein. It's a case where he could be a mu'ad, but a davar she'enu mitkavein, and he is chayav in kofar. So you see that there's no correlation between the skilata shor, the mitata shor, and the kofar. Again, that's supportive of Shmuel, who sees no correlation and says that you pay kofar in all these situations. But for Rabbah, this breita is problematic. Tam bekavana, if it's a tam who intentionally kills, chayav mita, the animal, like we said before, whether it's a tam or mine, if it kills a person, he's chayav mita, he's subject to the death penalty. Upatur mikofar, there's no kofar by a tam, there's only kofar by a muad. Tam shalobi kavana, if you have an animal that has not demonstrated problematic behavior, and then he goes ahead and kills unintentionally, there, patur mizeh mizeh. There is patur from the mitah because he didn't have proper kavanah, and if kavanah zeh v'ragat zeh is patur, and there's no kofir over here because you're talking about a tam. So it's what you see from this braita is that's very supportive of the position of Shmuel, that when you have a case that is shalom b'kavanah, you still have to pay kofir. V'nizakin shalom b'kavanah. What happens if an animal damages unintentionally? So far what we've been dealing with and the psukim that we're dealing with are from the case of a shor that is killing an individual. So in the case where the shor kills the individual, that's when we're dealing with death penalty to the animal, kofir to the baalim. Over here, the question is, what happens if the shor goes out and does nezek, does damage? What is the din over there when it does unintentional damage? Rabbi Yehuda Michayev. Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayav in that case. Rabbi Shimon poter. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says you are patur. But what's the reasoning behind their positions? My time, under Rabbi Yehuda, yolef mi kofro. Rabbi Yehuda learns from kofir. Ma kofro shelo bikavana chayav. Just like by kofir, you pay it even if it was shelo bikavana. Again, this is subscribing to that position of Rabbi Yochanan that says mi'im kofir. And like Shmuel says in our sugya, that even when you're not subject to the death penalty, there's still a chiyuv of kofir. So too, by nizakin, you should also be chayav, despite the fact that you lack kavanah. The short, Shimon learns it out from the death penalty of the animal. Patur. Just like if he kills unintentionally, he's not subject to the death penalty. So too, if he does damage unintentionally, patur, he should be patur. So Rabbi Yehuda, nami nelef mikatle. Why doesn't Rabbi Yehuda subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon and learn it out of the death or the death penalty to the animal? He says, Danim tashlumim, mitashlumim. I want to learn out reparations, restitution, compensation, one from the other. So I'm going to learn out from kofir, which is a monetary payment, and I'm going to learn about nizakim, which is also a monetary payment. Veindanim tashlumim mita. But I'm not going to compare the case of monetary payments or restitution and mitah in the case of a death penalty. Rabbi Shimon nami nelech mi kofro. Why doesn't Rabbi Shimon subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda and learn it out from kofir? He says, danim chiyuvei deshor mi chiyuvei deshor. It only makes sense to compare the obligations of the shor, the responsibilities of the shor, lafuke kofir de chiyuvei de balimu. The balim who own this possession that did something wrong, they have to pay kofir. But that's not coming or stemming from the animal itself. On the other hand, when it comes to the death penalty, or when it comes to nizakim, that stems from the activities of the animal itself. Now, over here, the Nachlat Moshe has a very, very nice explanation, which helps to understand the Shoresh HaMachloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Just as an aside, the Rabbeinu Hananel says that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda's positions here, even though the Gemara explains why their positions are here, he sees this being a part of the broader machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon throughout Shas, whether you are chayav by davar she'enu mitkaven or not. And Rabbi Shimon, who says that by davar she'enu mitkaven, you are patur. So to over here, he's going to say, davar she'enu mitkaven, you are patur. But then Rabbi Yehuda definitely believes that davar she'enu mitkaven is chayav. Therefore over here, he's going to say that you are chayav. And so he sees that as being the underlying machloket or reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon's positions over here. But what the Nachlat Moshe says is that when it comes to paying of kofir, obligation to pay kofir is because of the pshiah or the negligence of the balim. It has nothing to do with the intent of the shor. It has nothing to do with the actual behavior of the shor. It has to do with the negligence or the lack of shmirah provided by the balim. And that's where it says there, v'lo shmenu balav. In regards to kofir, there is a strong indictment of the owner, which is v'gam balav yumat, im kosher yishat alav, natan pidyon nafsho kosher yishat alav. So there he has responsibility because of his behavior, the fact that he didn't watch the animal properly. And that's why it's v'ad b'valav, v'lo yishmerena, v'emit ish o isha. And then it ends up going on and killing is because of his lack. The second thing is that the shor is subject to a death penalty over here, and that comes from the shor itself. That's not the balim, but rather the behavior of the shor. Because the shor intended to kill, That's why it will be subject to the death penalty. If it didn't intend to kill, it won't be subject to the death penalty. So those are the two aspects that usually when a shor kills someone, both of them are in effect. The Balim clearly didn't do the right thing here, or didn't watch it properly, therefore they're chayav kofer. On the other hand, the shor had kavanatola azik, and therefore the shor himself is also chayav in that instance, skila, because of his intent to kill. The question now becomes, when you're dealing with nizakin, this is a chakira that we said numerous times in the Masechta, but why are you chayav for nezek? So there are two possible ways to formulate that. One possible way to formulate is that you are trying to restore the damage that you did. You're trying to make restitution, return the object to its previous state. The other possibility is the reason that you're chayav and nezek is because you were negligent. You were posheya as a shomer. And so therefore, if you look at nizakim, this is what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, as being a failure of the watching, the guarding by the bow, it is his negligence, the pshiat ha-bow, and for that reason, you're chayav and nizakim. Well, if I look in the case of a shor that kills an adam, that is akin to the case of kofar. Kofar is a case where the lack of shmirah, the negligence of the balim, is what brings them to be chayav kofar. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda compares nizakim to kofar because for him, they look the same, or they look identical, which is that there's a negligence or a failure on the part of the balim. And then Rabbi Shimon sees nezek as being simply a restitution, compensation to make whole the person that you damaged. And in that case, that is much more akin to the death penalty or the necessity to kill the animal when it kills someone, because that he brought upon himself. I mean, that it was the animal's behavior and his intent to do damage that lands him in the predicament where now he's going to be subject to a death penalty. So too, by the case of nezek, that is the responsibility or the result of the behavior of the animal itself. And so therefore, he's going to compare nezek to the case of ketola, of the death penalty of the shor. But in that way, you could explain the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon revolving around their view of what is the primary purpose of paying for nezek or making payments when someone does damage. And so whether you focus on the negligence of the bow or the idea of repairing or returning the object to its previous state, that will determine what you compare it to with regards to an animal that kills an adam. And that's why you end up with this difference in opinion. So it's a very nice, a beautiful way to explain this machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, it kamen l'rogat ha-beima v'rogat adam patur. If he intends to kill a behema, and he ends up killing an adam, he is patur. Now the Gemara is mitayek out of that line of the Mishnah. If he intended to kill this individual, and he killed someone else, he will be chayav. So, in the case here, it's a case where he intends for an animal, and ends up killing a ben adam. That's where he's going to be patur. But had he intended to kill another person, and ends up killing another victim, over there he would be chayav. Matzita and delok Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya have a bright Rabbi Shimon Omer. Even if he intends to kill person A and ends up killing person B, Rabbi Shimon believes you are patur in that case. It's a machloke between the Rabban and Rabbi Shimon and the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which is that if you intend to kill, but you end up killing the wrong victim, not the victim who you intended for, are you chayav or patur? The Rabbanan say you're chayav in that case. Rabbi Shimon believes you are patur. So what the Gemara is saying over here is that the diuk of our Mishnah goes against that position of Rabbi Shimon, because the Mishnah specifically gives a case where it intended for an animal and kills a person, implying that if it intended for a person and killed a person, you would be chayav in that case, and that goes against Rabbi Shimon's position. So Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Shimon, Tamar Kura, the Pasuk says, Ashur Yisakel, the gamba lav yumat. The shor is put to death, and the owners are also, quote-unquote, killed. Kmitat balim kat kmitat ashur. Just like the death penalty of the owner, so too is the death penalty of the shor. Ma balim adimikavin le. Just like by the balim, until they have specific intent, then they are not chayav. Af shor nami adimikavin le. So too by the shor, he has to have specific intent. But that underlies a premise that by a human being or by Balim, if they intended for someone and end up with the wrong victim, that you would be patur. And how do you know that? Ubalim gufayim inalan. How do you know that that's the case, that you have to intend for the victim in order to be chayav? at least according to Rabbi Shimon, that is because the Katav Kra, the Pasuk Stamar Kra, the Pasuk says in Dvarim when it's talking about murderers and going into Galut or putting to death, it says Va'arav Lo, that he lay in ambush in waiting for the individual, V'kamalav, and then he jumps on him and he attacks him. Achi Kavein Lo. Va'arav Lo means that he has specific intent. He is setting up to ambush this individual, to lay in wait for this particular individual. That means he has his eye on the victim. And so you see from here the necessity to have the tent for the victim that is killed in the end. V'rabbanan, the Rabbanu disagree with Rabbi Shimon and say that that's not the case. That even when you intend for A and kill B, you are chayav. Hayav ravlo, mayavidli. What do they do with the ravlo of the pasuk? So Amrei debay Rabbi Yanai, prat lazarek evin lego. That comes to exclude a case where a person throws a stone into a group of people. So when he throws a group of people, in that case, he will be patur. Heichi dami. What is the scenario? If it's a case that gathered in that group are 9 Kananim in one Israel, the reason you're patur over here is because the majority of individuals there are Kananim. And so therefore we'll go achara rov. If you go after the rov, there's no reason to subject this individual to a death penalty for throwing the stone in there. Once again here, you can see the parentheses with the star. Then down below, he notes again, the reason you're patur by the Kananim is not because their lives are worth less. And not because the shore would not necessarily be put to death for killing a Kanani, because we know that if he kills an Eben Kanani, that is the case. But rather, it's because we're Danim et Dineihem. We judge them or adjudicate the case based on what they would do in that scenario. And in that scenario, they would not make the person culpable. So the case we have 9 Kananim and 1 Israel, there's nothing to speak about. Inami, or if the scenario is Palgo-Palgo, you have 50-50, Safek Nefeshot Dakel. When it comes to matters of capital crimes, capital punishments, in that case, if we're at a 50-50 tie, we always go Lekula. Rashi claims that that is a derivative of the Din of Beit Din, which says, Vishaftu Eida Vitzilu Eida, that the Beit Din is enjoined to always look out for the best interests of the parties that are in front of them. And that means that if they are v'safek, we're always going to go to hakel, we'll go to kula. Gemara says, lo tzricha deika tisha Yisraelim v'echad Kanani. The scenario here is where he throws it into a group of individuals where there are 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kanani. Da'av agav deruba Yisraelim ninu, even though the majority of people there are Yisraelim, kevan deika chada Kanani benayu, since there is 1 Kanani amongst them, avilei kavua. Then it becomes like a fixed measure. Chol kavua, anything that's fixed in place, kemechsa amechsa dami. It's considered to be like 50-50. Visafek nafshot hakel. And now if you're at a 50-50 shot, and you have a safek in a death penalty, we're always gonna go la hakel. We're always gonna go the kula. So now, first of all, with regards to chol kavua, kemechsa amechsa dami, anytime you have a fixed grouping, we consider that to be a 50-50 case and we don't go after the rove. The reason for that is that if you're trying to get to a statistical sample, then you want the people coming randomly out of the greater group or the greater population in which you are trying to get a statistical sample from. So if in that population you get random statistical samples, they should measure out to be a rove. Whatever the rove is, on the case of the majority, whatever the majority is, that should be the outcome that you have in those scenarios. On the other hand, if you're talking about stationary objects or stationary things, then in that case, it's very hard to argue that you're assigning the probabilities of what is true in the wider or broader population to these individuals. Because since these individuals are present and they are here and they're not coming out of the greater population, to become a statistical sample that would measure or should mirror the larger population, in that case, it doesn't make sense to rely on the probability, and therefore we're going to deem it to be kemechsa amechsa, like it's a 50-50 shot. I mean, that's the closest way to explain it logically. On the other hand, many of the achronim point out, like Rav Chanan Wasserman, that this is a gzeirat ha-katuv. Gzeirat ha-katuv is that when you have kavua, it's kemechsa amechsa domi. Now, what that says is, according to the Chachamim, if you throw a stone into a group of individuals where the majority are Israel, 9 Israelim, 1 Kanani, and in that case, it's nitkavein, veragetzeh, intended to kill someone, and he ends up killing one person amongst that group that is there. So if you were looking at Rove, you would assume that the Rove are Yisraelim, and he should be subject to a death penalty. He should be chayav for throwing the stone in there. On the other hand, if you believe, like we're saying here, that kol kavua kamechsa mechsa dummy, that's like a 50-50 shot, then in that case you have a safek, and since you have a safek, we're going to go to kula, and there will be no culpability for the individual who threw the stone in there. What Rashi says, and the Balei Tosfot also say over here, this is the source for al shas, whenever the shas says that kol kavua kamechsa mechsa dummy, it's learned out of the word varav lo over here, that teaches you that you need specificity according to Rabbi Shimon, but according to the Chamim, teaches you that even when you have 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kanani, that's Kamechsa Mechsa Domi, and this is the paradigm by which, and the prism through which we see the rest of the Torah, that anytime you have a Kavua, it's Kamechsa Al Mechsa Domi. The problem with that is, where does Rabbi Shimon know that din from? Rabbi Shimon has a different limud from Arav Lo. Since he has a different limud from Arav Lo, where is his source for the fact that a Kode Kavua, Kamechsa Al Mechsa Domi? So over here, you can see the Balei Tosafot already tried to address it, and they suggest that even according to Rabbi Shimon, the Arav Lo is still available to teach this din, whether that's because the Arav Lo is just a remez to his din, or it's the focus on the Lo that makes it that way, but maybe the Arav is available for the Drasha, or the subsequent words, which are Kam Alav. All of those are possibilities of where Rabbi Shimon learns it out from, without compromising his position to saying V'arav lo means you need specific intent for the victim in order to be chayav mita when you kill an individual. The bigger issue that Tosfot raises over here is, don't we have a problem now of hatrat safek? There is a machlokan in the Gemara whether you can give hatrat safek, where you warn the individual that if they carry through with this activity, then they are going to be chayav. But at the time that you say it, or the time that you give the warning, there's uncertainty as to whether the party that you were warning is going to carry out the act or do this. So that's what we call hatrat safek, or in a scenario where the person has more time. He has a time limit in which he needs to do something. For instance, eat up kodashim and not have notar. If you warn him that you must eat it now, otherwise you're going to end up with notar, that still leaves open the possibility that he'll eat it prior to the time and there will be no notar. So that's called the hatrat safek. So what the Balei Tosafot say is, what about our scenario over here? We have 90 Yisraelim and 1 Kanani, and you're deeming it kemechsa al mechsa. You're deeming it as if it's a 50-50 case. And he's giving hatrah. You're warning him that if you do this, you're going to be chayav. That's a classic case of hatrat safek, a warning that is a safek. So what the Balei Tosafot would say, first of all, according to one who says that hatrat safek lo shma hatara, that if you give a warning that is not clear and is not absolute in nature, if there's some uncertainty as to whether the person is going to act or do the behavior that you are suggesting, that'll be called a hatrat safek. And a hatrat safek, according to the Man D'Amar, that's lo shma hatra, he can't be the author of this Gemara, and this Gemara is not according to him. But rather, it's according to the one who says that hatrat safek shmei hatara, that the hatra of a safek is called a hatra. That runs us into a problem or a stira with other Gemarot, which Tosfot here quotes two Gemarot, which are problematic. He says, "Hacha im nimsa shisrael harag, amechayvin lei behakad zeh, v'chazar v'kad zeh." So when a person goes and hits person number one, and then hits person number two, and the third party that's warning him not to do this says, don't hit B. And then he goes ahead and hits A or B, A and B. In that case, he's going to be chayav, and hatrat safek is considered to be a good hatra'ah over notar. In a case of notar where he says, al totir, don't leave it over, even though it is a hatrat safek over there, we make you chayav. So how come in those two situations, we don't consider it to be hatrat safek? Because there is a high likelihood of a violation of the din or the isur that is there. Why don't we say the same thing in our case over here? That the rove is koveya, the fact that this is no longer considered to be a hatrat safek, but rather a regular hatrah. So the answer that Tosfot gives is that the nature of the hatrah over here is different than the hatrah over there. Over here, when you give the hatrah, there's a complete safek as to whether you're going to kill someone at all. You threw the stone in there. You have no idea if you're going to kill someone. You have no idea who the victim might be. Whereas the case is that I just quoted you from the Gemara in Makot, there, as the Balei Tosafot note, there is certainty that you're going to do something wrong. We just don't know the exact individual upon which it's going to happen. mean that you're going to hit one, A, or you're going to hit B. You're going to kill A or you're going to kill B. But either way, there's going to be somebody dead over here. Just a question of whether you need to get an absolute warning, or is it enough that the person says, don't kill A, don't kill B, or don't kill whomever you're going to come into contact with. And same thing by Notar. Even though he said, al totiru, don't leave it over, don't leave it over. Over there, we know for certain there's going to be Notar. It's just a question of when it's going to be Notar. But there's an absolute certainty that the Avera will be violated. Unlike our case over here, where he throws the rock into the group of people, it's never certain that he's going to kill someone. And so for that reason, the Hatratz are fake over here. That's the way that the Baalei Tosafot will deal with it. The Rashba has a much simpler way to deal with it, a much more elegant way to deal with it, and it says that you have to look at this from two perspectives. You have to look at it from the perspective of the warning of the Hatra'ah. When it comes to the Hatra'ah, then Rov counts. You have Rov Yisraelim, Eved Kenani Echad. So once that is, the Rov is binding, and if he warns the individual not to throw the rock in there, that is no longer a Hatratz fake, but it's a Hatratz Vadai. Since the Rov is Koveya, or, in essence, we've seen this before, that Miyot Kaleta Dami. The Miyot is if it doesn't exist anymore, and therefore there's only one party of individuals there. They're all Yisraelim. Therefore, when you give the Hatra, it's a good enough Hatra. But when it comes to the death penalty and holding the person culpable, then over there we're going to say, based on the Gzeret HaKatuva of Rav Lo, that called Kavua Kamechsa Al Mechsa Domi. And in that way, the Rashba explains that you could have Hatra'ah, which will work over here because there's no Hatra'ah Safek. It's a Hatra'ah Vadai because the Rov is Koveya. Because you don't have this Gzeret HaKetuv that takes away the Rov and makes it into a Mechsa Mechsa. In other words, the Arav Lo comes by the case of whether the person's going to be subject to the death penalty. Over there, that is a Safek because call the Kavua Kamechsa a Mechsa Dummy. Right now, the next Mishnah begins. Shora Isha, the Shora Yitomim, Shora Pitropus, Shora Midbar, Shora Gdesh, Shora Hager Shemet, Ve'en Lo Yorshim, Hari Elu Chayavim Mita. All of these Shvarim can be subject to the death penalty. So that is a Shor owned by a woman, a Shor owned by the Orkmans, probably through the estate. Shora Pitropus, the Shor that is the guardian is taking care of on behalf of the Yitomim. Shora Midbar, it seems to mean Hefker, a wild Shor. Wild in the sense of that there's nobody who owns the animal. Shor Hekdesh, Shor that was Mikudash, person dedicated or donated to the Mikdash. And Shor Ager, Shor that was owned by a Ger, who passes away and has no inheritors. All of these are Chayavim Mita if they kill someone. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shor Midbar, Shor Hekdesh, Shor Ager Shemet, Turim Min Mita. All of those are Patur Min Mita, Lefisha Ein Lehem Balim, because they have no owners. You can't have a death penalty without owners because of the way that it's phrased over there. It says, Ashor Yisakel, Vigam Balav Yumat. So that the Balim, or the necessity for Balim, is a part and parcel of the punishment over here. So Tara Banan, Shor, Shor, Shiva. The word Shor in this Parshia appears 7 times. As the Baalei Tosafot note over here, you need one of them, the Gufei, to teach that we're talking about a Shor. The other 6 are extraneous. And they match up with the 6 Shvarim that we mentioned in our Mishnah. Lavi, Shor Isha, Shor Yitamim, Shor Apitropus, Shor Midbar, Shor Ekdesh, Shor Ager, Shemet, Vein Lo Yoshim. All the cases in our Mishnah, the 6 cases of our Mishnah. Vildomer, Shor Midbar, Shor Ekdesh, Shor Ager, Shemet, Vein Lo Yoshim, Turim and Amital, Vishen Lehem Balim. Because they have no owners. And without owners, they're not going to be subject to a death penalty. Am Rav Huna, Poter Haya Rav Yehuda, Afila Nagach, Ulusof Ekdesh, Nagach, Ulusof Efkir. We would have thought that the only time that the animal would not be subject to the death penalty is if the animal was already not owned before the act that he did or before getting himself into this bind. So since they disowned the animal beforehand, it's an ownerless animal. And that ownerless animal then will not be subject to the death penalty. But what Rav Huna says is that that's not only true where it happened before the act, but even afterwards. I mean that even if it gored, and then the person dedicated to Ekdesh, or it went in a gored, and he's mafkir the animal. In both those cases, now there's no balim, and the lack of balim should make it that it's not chayav mita. So mimai, how do you know that that's true? How do you know that Rabbi Yehuda would extrapolate the din in such a fashion? Migdani tarte, because the Mishnah gives 2 examples. It says, shor midbar v'shor ager shemeit v'ein lo yoshim. A wild ox that has no owner, it's out in the fields, the Shor HaGer and the Shor of a convert who has no Yorshim, both of those are Shor of Hefker. They're ownerless Shvarim. That's what the Gemara says. Shor HaGer Shemait Mainiu. What is that? What's the case here? The Kevin Deino Yorshim Avalei Shor Hefker. Because he has no inheritors, it makes it in. When he deceases, all of his property becomes Hefker, including the Shor. So Hainu Shor Midbar. Didn't you already mention Shor Midbar earlier in the Mishnah? Which is a case of Shor of Hefker. So Hainu Shor HaGer Shemait Veino Yorshim. The two are identical. Elalav Kamashmalan. From this year we want to conclude that Filu Nagach Lebesofik Dish Nagach Lebesofik Kier Shma Mina. You see from here that even if that Gdesh was done after the damage or the killing, or even if the Hefker was done after that point in time, it still would protect the animal from being subject to a death penalty. So that's how Rav Huna knows that Rav Yehuda's din extrapolated even to these other scenarios, because our Mishnah gives two examples of Hefker, and those two examples of Hefker must mean that there's Hefker before the damage or the killing was done, and there's Hefker afterwards, and both of them will exempt the Shor from the death penalty. Tani Nami Ochim, have a brayta that supports that understanding. Yeter al kein Rav Yehuda, afilu nagach l'sofik dish, nagach l'sofik kir, patur. So that's exactly what Rav Huna claimed was the position of Rav Yehuda. Shenemar v'ad bibala ve'mit. There's a connection or correlation between the balim and the killing of the Shor. Ad shetei mita v'amada b'din shavin ke'echad. So it says, until there is ownership or singular ownership from the time of the death of the animal until the time that it shows up in court. The way I just explained it is the way that Rashi does or explains it earlier in the Masechta, that when we say that they have to be an owner both at the time of death and an owner at the time of Amnad Abedin, what I suggest and what Rashi says is that's a single individual, that the same owner has to have ownership over the Shor throughout that duration. The Gemara Din Lo Ba'inan. Oh, in that case, you don't need the Gemar Din. Vashor Yisakel, Gemar Dinu. Shor Yisakel is a case of Gemar Din, and therefore that should require Balim there as well. So what you have to amend it to say is that until the killing by the Shor, the Amada Bedin, as well as the Gemar Din, were all done, all under the single ownership of the same ownership. That's the way Rashi explains it over here. That you have a singular and continuous ownership throughout. On the other hand, other Rishonim believe that you don't have to have particular ownership. You just have to have ownership. Meaning at these pivotal points, or these pivotal times, you need an owner to the animal in order for it to be Chayav Mita. And the lack of evidence of ownership during that period of time would make it that he would not be subject to the death penalty. Again, according to Rashi, it means that they have to have the same Balim across the board. According to other Rishonim, it's simply that in each of these stages, you need someone to have ownership over the Shor. It just can't be a Shor Hefker during that period of time. Just before we finish up here, there is a Nemuke Yosef that spends time on this. You can already see this a little bit in Rashi and a little bit in the Tosafot as to why or what is unique about these six Shvarim that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Already by Shor Isha, both Rashi and Tosafot offer up an explanation as to why you would think that a Shor Isha might not be subject to the death penalty. So Rashi claims, because it says, Lo Tema Bala Shor Ketiv Lashon Zachar. So don't say, the Lo Tema Bala Shor Ketiv, that when it expresses it, it says that you're the owner of the Shor in a male conjugation. And since it's the owner of the Shor in a male conjugation, you would think that Bal HaShor means literally the male, or the Bal, the owner of the Shor, and not the Isha. The Kamash Malan is that the Shor of Isha is subject to the death penalty according to the Tanakhama. The Bali Tosafot suggests that the Havamino is that by the Zakim Ktiv Ish Davka, the Kain Tzich Tzich Ribui. Since it says by the Nizakim in the Parsha only Ish, which says Vechi Gov Shor Ish et Shor Re'ehu, you would think that that means Ish exclusively and not Isha. So along comes the Mishnah to dispel that thought and say that even by a Shor Isha, you are Chayav, or the animal is Chayav Skila. In a similar fashion, the Muke Yosef goes through each of these cases. He says that the Yutomim, since they are not Bnei Deya, we would think that they're not, or the animal is not subject to the death penalty. That's what the Mishnah comes again to fight against, that type of thought process. Apitropos, the guardian, is a case where the Lotema, don't say Dika Shmira Kodo, since he did some little shmirah, and there's not a lot of damage over here, that they didn't fully charge him over here in order to, the Torah had rachamim on him, in order not to have it that they, therefore you would think that they wouldn't be responsible or that the animal under their auspices would not be their problem. Amidbar, it teaches you that even without a lack of balim. Hekdesh teaches you apagav deikab seidel hekdesh. Even though there's going to be a lost hekdesh by taking it back or saying that it is subject to the death penalty, nevertheless, the shor shel hekdesh is mentioned by the Mishnah to tell you that despite the seidel hekdesh, it is subject to the death penalty. Hager shemet ve'en lo yorshim, that is similar to midbar. That's where we have the repetition of the case of hefker. And the Gemara already noted for us that what we learn out of that is that it comes to teach you that even if you do the hefker after the fact, according to Rabbi Huda, that would be enough to exempt you from the death penalty over here, because Rabbi Huda believes that a lack of ownership results in a case where there'll be no, whether it's before or after the killing by the shor, either of those cases, the hefker will be sufficient to deem it that it doesn't have balim and won't be subject to the death penalty according to Rabbi Huda. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Daled Amud Bet.